On this episode of The Big Number, we rename the OKC Thunder the OKC Dobermans because of their all-time great defense. But does that make them the title favorites, even better than Boston? That and more coming up right now. I'm Tom Haverstraw, and you're watching our new podcast, The Big Number with Dan Devine. Dan, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. I'm in our Yahoo New York City studios. I've got a map of New York City behind me. I got the whole city behind me, Tom. Let's put up some numbers.
Let's do it. And I got rid of my mustache and my goatee, Pitbull, the costume, Rowdy Piper from last week. We're back, Dan and Tom, every Thursday right here on Yahoo Sports. Go subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts and catch us on YouTube as well. Dan, we got to get to the big number this week, which is one of my favorite numbers I've come across in quite some time. So let's get right to it here. This week's big number is 85. That's OKC's defensive rating so far this season once you adjust for league average. And that, my friends, is the lowest figure we've seen through eight games since 1984, basically when we started tracking possessions at the league level 40 years ago. We've never seen a defense this good at this point in the season. And the big reason is because they got some dogs over there, Dan. They got some dogs between Lou Dort, we knew that, Kasem Wallace, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren might be the best rim protector in the NBA through eight games. And oh, by the way, they went out and got a dog in Alex Caruso in that trade in the offseason for Josh Giddey. And it reminds me of a Phil Jackson quote that he gave to Sam Smith in Jordan Rules, where he referred to the Jordan, Pippen, Horace Grant defense, where they harassed the opposing guards and just destroyed the opponent defensively. He said it was like releasing the Dobermans, okay? I am ready to say here, that OKC should no longer be the Thunder. They should be the OKC Dobermans, okay? The Dobermans are on the prowl right now, and it's astounding. Yeah, 85. So basically where I get that number is they're 15% better than league average. League average right now is 113 points per 100 possessions, and they're at clocking in, according to Basketball Reference, at 96.9. We've never seen a defense 15 points per 100 possessions better than league average at this point in the season. And it's fueled what is basically the best start we've ever seen in the NBA. Is no team in NBA history has come out of the gate with seven straight victories by double digits. It's never happened until this OKC Thunder team. And I think they've got another gear to go. So, Dan, they don't have Isaiah Hartenstein yet. Their defense is this good. I think offensively, they have some room to grow. We'll get into that in a little bit. But they have created so much chaos with Kasem Wallace and Shai and Jalen Williams early. J-Dub has been fantastic. Here is the Doberman victim list. They made Trae Young cough up a season-high 10 turnovers. They made Zach LaVine cough up a season-high 7 turnovers. They made the Wagner brothers cough up, yes, the brothers combined, a season-high 9 turnovers. They held Wemby to like the worst game of his life. He had 6 points, one basket the entire game. They held Nikola Jokic in that season opener to a season-low 16 points. They held James Harden to a season-low 12 points. They held Anthony Simons to a season-low 9 points. And it's because they're a pick-and-roll graveyard. That defense with those Dobermans out there, they assaults the opposing ball handler when they're trying to run a pick and roll. This is a crazy stat. OKC, according to the Synergy Sports tracking, the pick and roll ball handler, so be it James Harden, Trae Young, those kinds of players, when they're attacking, they are more likely to turn over the ball than they are to score. That is only one other time in the last 20 years since Synergy has tracked this that a ball handler is more likely to cough up the ball than to score. The only other team to do this is, of course, the Doberman-like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Miami Heat defense. So I know that they had a little bit of a bad game against the Denver Nuggets at altitude where Russell Westbrook went off on them. But I think they are the title favorites at this point. I think they are better than any other team in the NBA. And I think come playoff time, once Isaiah Hartenstein's in the fold, I think people start realizing we should have been paying attention to this way back when they were just destroying opposing offenses. Dan, what do you think about OKC so far?
I'm all the way in on this big number. Although we should notice, we should note rather, Russell Westbrook doing this does feel like a deliberate slap in the face of the big number podcast. Although we mentioned him as having challenges as a bench player, you know, put into the starting lineup, and now all of a sudden he's blooming again. So maybe it's we were giving him, as you mentioned, like we were supporting him, really trying to get him into his best role, his best self.
That's right.
The Thunder, though, I mean, completely on board for this. You know, the number one defense with a bullet, as you mentioned. They are cleaning the glass strips out garbage time stats, right? And they've had a fair amount of it because they've been won double digits, as you mentioned, the first seven games. They're allowing 7.6 fewer points per 100 than the second place defense. That is the same as the difference between second and ninth. So they are like a full top 10 away from even number two right now. You mentioned sort of the relative, you know, to league average. Play-by-play stats, PBP stats, does track a thing called relative offensive and defensive efficiency going back to 2000. Like more or less tracks, like how much better are you than league average in a given season? The best defenses in that span, 25 years, it's like the 04 Pistons and Spurs, teams like the 08 Celtics, the KG Celtics, teams that you would think of as the greatest defenses of all time. Right now, the Thunder defense is like doubling those defenses up. So it's completely legit. And you mentioned the chaos creation. Alex Caruso is sort of a great avatar for that. But this was something the Thunder did really well last season. They created a ton of turnovers. They put a ton of pressure on you. Their ball pressure and their pickup points were super high. They have ratcheted that up even another notch so far. The Thunder right now lead the NBA in steals, blocks, and deflections per game. Since the NBA started tracking hustle stats like deflections, which is about a decade ago, only one other team has done that for a full season, and it was the year one KD Warriors, which we think of as like one of the best teams of all time. So you add all that up, the way they create turnovers, the way they wreak havoc, the number of guys they've got where they have five players who have double-digit steals already, four players with at least five blocks already, six players with at least double-digit deflections already. It's a whole party, and everybody's invited, and it is the kind of party you do not want to be invited to if you are an opposing offense. I'm firmly on board with this. I think this has a chance to go down as one of the great defenses in NBA history, and it takes a masterpiece showing by a guy like Nikola Jokic and the rare throwback game from a guy like Russell Westbrook to even give yourself a chance of taking down a defense like that.
Yeah. And this happens all the time, right, Dan, where you have an article or an idea, an angle, and then right before you're about to hit publish,
that's right,
they have their worst game. The counterfactual presents itself and it renders your whole angle just completely moot. That's not the case here. Cause I actually think Denver, what they did to OKC almost raises the counterfactual to a degree that you're like, oh yeah, they really need an Isaiah Hartenstein on their team because the backup center and the backup center's backup center, like OKC is running their fourth string center for much of this game or going small completely because they don't have Kenrick Williams, they don't have Jalen Williams, the other Jalen Williams, and they don't have Isaiah Hartenstein. And they were beat up on the boards, and I also think they were due for some little bit of regression. So yeah, Wednesday's game was kind of like the creator's curse or the writer's curse. Right before you deliver it, it just kind of all falls apart. But that's not the case here. I actually think Wednesday night's game, the loss to Denver, was a healthy reminder that they need Isaiah Hartenstein. Like, people might say this is the Russell Westbrook game, like his revenge game or the Jokic game or Peyton Watson game. I think it's actually the Isaiah Hartenstein game because they were doubling Jokic every time that he got the ball because they didn't want to get Chet in foul trouble because they knew they have no backup to the backup to the backup and they're running four string centers out there. With Isaiah Hartenstein, I think a lot of those issues get solved by his rim presence and by his rebounding. And so in some ways, I kind of feel like the Wednesday loss was a reason to actually believe in this team more. I know that sounds psychotic, but to believe in the ceiling of this team more because Isaiah Hartenstein hasn't played yet. And I think there was a little bit of three-point regression due on that defense. They allowed 28% shooting on three-pointers. But man, the turnover rate that they cause, that's going to be constant. And I do think just the chaos that these Dobermans create, I think is going to sustain itself for the rest of the season, only get better when Isaiah Hartenstein is out there.
Yeah, the big number within this big number on the Wednesday game is 7 offensive rebounds, Nikola Jokic, 13 overall for the Nuggets. The Nuggets grabbed more than 30% of their own misses. This was like the one problem the Thunder had defensively last season. That's why they got Isaiah Hartenstein, and they just haven't had him available. And the fact that they've won 7 of 8 and been so dominant in the course of it, it indicates just like how impressive the other guys have been, doesn't indicate that they don't need Isaiah Hartenstein. I want to go sort of like the flip side of your point about the positivity of the Wednesday loss. A lot of times they had Alex Caruso guarding Nikola Jokic, which is something we've seen a bunch early from Mark Daigneault, where it's like, you're going to put him on DeAndre Ayton. You're going to put him on whatever big the other team has, because we think we can play small, but also mess around and kind of like we'll play like let Alex Caruso wreak havoc and press up on the ball. And he can guard up. He can fly around. He's going to create more turnovers, more deflections, more steals, stuff like that. The interesting part to me, though, is the flip side of that. Like Alex Caruso has been absolutely as advertised on the defensive end of the floor. He's only playing 20 minutes a game, and he's still averaging 2 steals and 4 deflections a game. Like he's just an absolute monster. Like a dozen possessions every night, he's blowing up almost single-handedly. The other side of the floor, though, is where I think the rubber's going to meet the road a little bit with Caruso, because he's 3-for-21 from three-point range so far, 3-for-11 at the rim, and he's shooting 23.7% overall. So this is obviously a dramatic drop off from where he was in Chicago the last couple of seasons. And then opponents can now guard him with bigs. And that was like in the big comeback that Denver had, it was Jokic guarding Caruso and like sitting 10 feet off of him and mucking things up on the inside, which sounds kind of familiar because that was the problem with Josh Giddey, who they traded to get Alex Caruso. And so it's a little early for all this. Like, I'm not saying that there's a huge like OKC has an Alex Caruso problem. I'm just saying that's something to keep an eye on because the Thunder's defense has been lights out, absolutely incredible, better than everybody. The offense hasn't been as good so far, and there are some things that have to get worked out on that end, and I wonder if the Caruso component, some of that might just get cleaned up when Hartenstein comes back because he's also an elite offensive rebounder. They're going to score better second chance points. They're going to score better finishing on the interior, all that kind of stuff. But it's just something to keep an eye on as we make the case for them being the no doubt about it favorite.
100%. I hear you on that. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander quietly has not had a good year. I think he's come out of the gate a little slower than expected. His free throw attempts are way down, almost half of what they were 2 years ago. And I think, yes, Jokic got manhandled in the post in that Wednesday game. But I also think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a lot of opportunities where he's getting that call last year or 2 years ago, and he just didn't get the foul call on his rim attacks. And so much of his game is getting to the free throw line. And yeah, he had 10 free throws, but I think he could have had 15, 20 in that game. So both sides, I think, had a lot of reason to be upset with the officiating in Wednesday night's game. But I do think that, like, yeah, the offense, I think Alex Caruso is going to shoot better. I think he's going to regress up to the mean and shoot better than he has so far this season. I think there's going to be a little over under here at the end of this after the end of this episode about Alex Caruso and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's free throw attempts. Just a little tease there. I also think, like, once we see this OKC team fully formed, I think they're going to be a smidge better than every other team in the league. And they're only going to get better because of their age. They're one of the top 3 youngest teams in the NBA. And I think the more chemistry that they get together will only prove dividends down the road. So OKC with the Dobermans, OKC Dobermans, I think this entire chemistry, the culture of the team is awesome. I love the way they play. I love the way they're coached. And I do think by the end of the season, we're going to consider them as title favorites. Right now, BetMGM has the Celtics currently at plus 260 title favorites, which is even shorter than what they were preseason. But OKC is at plus 475. And I think there's real value there. I think OKC is going to be much, much stronger in terms of the title picture come the end of the season. I think they got a lot of work to do on the offensive end, but man, that defense already on the path to be all time. And we're going to talk about the other contenders, not just Boston, but some other teams there that can take OKC down from my throne as the title favorite right after we have paid some bills. All right, we're back, and I got to say, I'm already kind of feeling a little queasy about my take on OKC because, Dan, I know you got some counterfactuals here, which we'll get into this segment that we'll call the number crunch. Yeah, the big number is 85, the defensive rating for OKC, which is on pace to be the best we've ever seen. However, there's some pretty good teams out there that feel like they are the rightful owners of that title, the title favorite. So, Dan, what team would you like to present first as the counterfactual here for OKC?
I'm going to dig really deep in the crates here, Tom. I'm going to pull a completely unexpected and surprising. No, Boston Celtics. How about that? Defending NBA champions. Not exactly reinventing the wheel with this one, guys. 7-2, best offense in the NBA by a considerable margin. Top 10 defense. They've lost two games. One of them was to the Pacers in overtime on the road. The other one Wednesday night to a Golden State Warriors team that, spoiler alert, we'll be talking about in a minute. And they were two losses by a combined 9 points. All this despite not having Kristaps Porzingis for a single second so far, and also being without Jaylen Brown against the Warriors. So if you're being honest, we're putting you onto the truth serum here. We're going to stick the Dobermans on you if you lie. Are you taking Oklahoma City over the Boston Celtics in a 7-game series?
Look, the Dobermans can stay away here because I have been on this since day one. Okay. Preseason, Dan, I said that OKC was going to win it all. You can check it on yahoosports.com. I picked OKC over Boston in the finals, and everything I've seen so far makes me believe that OKC is the title favorite. They are that good defensively, and I think they're going to get things right offensively. And Boston, they've been good this year. And Jason Tatum's 3-point shot looks good, but they just lost at home to a pretty good Golden State Warriors team. I'm not going to knock that. The Denver Nuggets without Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray just beat the OKC. So I think, like, overall, what I think the Thunder did was they made Josh Giddey, which I think was the biggest problem of their postseason run last year, they turned that into that negative into a positive. They turned one of their biggest weaknesses into another strength, which is Alex Caruso, where he can guard those wings along with Lu Dort, along with Cason Wallace on Boston. And in a series, I kind of feel like they are tailor-made to beat the Boston Celtics with their size and their aggressiveness. And there are times where Boston, yeah, they have a low turnover rate, but they can get flustered offensively. And you saw Golden State take advantage of that a little bit in Wednesday night's game. And I think OKC's chaos wreaking havoc defensively, I think that could turn Boston, I don't know, less of a giant and into just another really good team.
Makes a ton of sense. And I mean, a lot of it, as you mentioned, is going to go back to what Oklahoma City does on the offensive end. They're in a situation right now where, like, as a team, you mentioned regression to the mean earlier. The OKC 3-point shooting has been below what you'd expect so far. You figure that's going to even out. That's going to come back up. And then all of a sudden you're talking about a top 10 offense again. So there's a reasonable argument there. Also surprising to me a little bit, as somebody who's, I think I said last week, I would be watching them to drop off. I think there's a reasonable argument for the Golden State Warriors right now. They just beat those Boston Celtics, as we talked about. Come into Thursday's games at 7-1, third in offensive efficiency and second in defensive efficiency, according to NBA.com's numbers. Every site that you look at has different possession counts and different sort of strength of schedule metrics and adjustments. But so far, good on both ends of the court. That's the big takeaway. Stephen Curry, obviously, still the like determining factor in pretty much every game that he is on the court for. You've been getting better play, like championship year caliber play from Andrew Wiggins, Gary Payton II, and Kevon Looney. So the depth component of the Warriors has been improved dramatically. Moving on from Klay Thompson hurt emotionally, but in terms of them redistributing those assets to bring in Kyle Anderson, bring in D'Anthony Melton, bring in Buddy Hield, elevate those guys. This looks like a really deep and sort of talented team. Maybe most important of all, Draymond Green, 220 minutes, one technical foul. He's on his best behavior, Tom. So we're not, if we strip out the time where Draymond Green misses 15 games for chokeslamming somebody, this should be a pretty good team all around. And by my count, Oklahoma City's roster on the whole, all combined, 178 playoff games. Steph and Draymond together, 145 by themselves. Be honest, in a seven-game series, are you taking the Oklahoma City Thunder over the Golden State Warriors as presently constructed?
I am. And the reason is, and I do love the Golden State Warriors this year. I, before the season, smashed the over on this team. They've got a lot of high IQ players. They got a lot of depth. And I think Buddy Hield is going to do a nice job of replacing Klay Thompson.
He's been sensational so far.
Do we think that they are going to win as Buddy Hield being the second best player on the team? Because that's what he's been so far this season. Buddy Hield has been outrageous, shooting 50% from downtown. He's scoring over 20 points a game this season, where it's like he couldn't get off the bench for the Sixers last year. It was his first postseason, and he couldn't get into the rotation until it was too late. So I guess most of my skepticism about, and it's very little skepticism, is just the Buddy Hield thing feels like at some point he's going to come back down to earth and not be the greatest shooter of all time. Steph Curry and Buddy Hield have created the Splash Buddies. I love it. It's a great nickname. I do think that there's a little bit of way over the top Buddy Hield coming back to earth that I think it's just not totally sustainable. If they make a trade where they're like, you know what, Steph, Draymond, Andrew Wiggins, like, let's turn four quarters into a dollar here in terms of the rotation and make a trade for a big name player, whether it's Giannis Antetokounmpo, just throwing it out there. This is all out the window. With Giannis on the team, I think they're going to be the title favorites. But to me, a lot of their early season surprise has been predicated on Buddy Hield making ridiculous shots. And he's a great three-point shooter. Over the last few seasons, more threes made than Stephen Curry himself. But I do think that it's a little too over the top for me to buy fully. But I still think they're a legit title contender.
This really just sounds to me like a lack of faith in Kyle Anderson. But nevertheless, we move on. Number three, how about the last unbeaten team in the NBA? Tom, you're fighting Cleveland Cavaliers, all of 9-0 after dispatching the New Orleans Pelicans on Wednesday night. First in offense, ninth in defense, according to NBA.com. Again, possession counts vary, but second and fifth by cleaning the glass, which strips out garbage time. Their core four, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, all looking healthy, all looking good. Garland looks dramatically improved over last season, which is basically a lost year after he had that fractured jaw and like had his mouth wired shut and lost 15 pounds. Evan Mobley looks like a different guy, empowered to do more creating with the ball in his hand. They have been getting, you know, they're generating more corner threes under Kenny Atkinson. It seems like he's being able to push the right buttons. They're getting out in transition more. They're hammering the ball when they're running the ball down everybody's throat. They're getting those third quarter cavalanches back. Right now, that's the team that has the best record in the NBA, and they look like the most balanced team on both sides of the floor. So, Tom Haberstroh, the Cleveland Cavaliers in a seven-game series, you buying them against the Oklahoma City Thunder?
No, I'm taking OKC. Give me the dogs over the Cavs, okay? Because I think that
even
a lot
Moondog,
of...
Does Oklahoma City get Moondog in that transaction?
Yeah, I think so. I think we got to do it. I know. It seems pretty wrong to do that. But Dan, this Cavs team, I feel like, have done this before, where we get caught up in their net rating or their offensive efficiency, and then come playoff time, they turn into a pumpkin. And I think that the Cavs, with Kenny Atkinson, have been so much better. They're doing so much more creative things offensively with Evan Mobley, and Darius Garland is back. However, I think actually Cleveland's ascension is an even better reason to think that OKC is going to waltz into the NBA Finals and face, wait a minute, is it Boston? Are we sure Boston's going to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers? Because the gap last year was, the gulf between the Boston Celtics and the next best team in the East was as wide as the Atlantic Ocean, right? But now the Cavs are 2 points behind them in point differential once you adjust for their schedule. They're right there. Like, yeah, they're 9-0, but Boston Celtics, I don't think, are sweating too much right now. But we have to remember, they got to go through Cleveland just to get to the NBA Finals. And last year, It was a lot of injuries. They faced the Indiana Pacers, which had a 2 on the SRS, the simple rating system. They were plus 2 points better every 100 possessions. The Boston Celtics were about 8 points better than them per 100 possessions. Cleveland this year, that gap went from 8 points better to 2. So yeah, in a weird way, I kind of feel like the Cavs ascension is bad news for the Celtics and actually good news for the OKC Thunder. So do you have another contender here that can take OKC down a peg?
Well, this is one that I'm increasingly bullish about and more optimistic about. And I'm not sure I'm interested in if you feel the same way. How about the Phoenix Suns? 7-1, tied for first in the West. We've maybe, this is maybe a fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. We won't get fooled again, whatever, after last season. But they're only 16th on offense right now, but they're 7th on defense. They're looking a lot more like a Mike Budenholzer team. They've punted on offensive rebounding. They're resulting in a dramatic improvement in their defensive rebounding. They're 6th in defensive rebounding rate. Jusuf Nurkić leads the NBA in defensive rebounding rate right now. They're top 10 in the share of shots they're allowing at the rim and behind the arc. They're completely vaporizing corner threes right now. They're plus 7.7 points per 100 with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal on the court, which is an improvement over last year. Kevin Durant, still an absolute killer in the fourth quarter, put up 11 of his 32 in the fourth to take down the Heat on Wednesday night and improve them to 7-1. Everything's moving in positive directions for them so far. Devin Booker and Bradley Beal both playing hard, playing efficient, even in slightly reduced offensive roles. Ryan Dunn has been an absolute revelation as a rookie for them, kind of like a sudden, oh my goodness, we have a 3-and-D small ball 5/big wing that can guard everybody. Royce O'Neal had a full season, is helping out there. Nurkić, as I mentioned, killing it on the defensive glass and also taking career high number of threes per 36 minutes. This looks like a Mike Budenholzer team. And generally speaking, Mike Budenholzer teams win a whole hell of a lot. So, and they also haven't had Kevin Durant all that often. So in a 7-game series, what do you think about the Suns' chances against the Oklahoma City Thunder?
I'm a little worried about the workload for Kevin Durant. Is he going to be in that 7-game series? He's averaging 39 minutes a game. 36-year-old Kevin Durant leading his team in those big moments, winning those clutch games. But also, they need every bit of that just to pull out these wins. Their clutch numbers are great. But I also think on the other side of that, it might be a little lucky. Some of those plays, I mean, Jimmy Butler forgot what he was doing at the end of that game.
It looked like he short-circuited, like somebody unplugged the controller.
Right. And that is something that's like, okay, how much can that be sustainable, where their point differential points to more like a 5-3 team on top of the fact that Kevin Durant is trying to do everything and doing a marvelous job of it. But I don't like the fact that he is playing the most minutes per game that he's played since Obama's first term. Like that's where we're at right now. Kevin Durant averaging 39 minutes a game is raising some red flags for me long term. I do like the way they're playing right now under Coach Bud. I do worry about their clutch rating. It seems a little flimsy for me, that record, but I do like the kind of process, even if the results seem a little fluky.
Well, Tom, you've bested me again. I've tried to crunch your number and you have come through it uncrunched. You've been undeterred from your belief that the Oklahoma City Thunder should be the number one favorite in the NBA. And who am I to argue with you? I think that defense is absolutely insane.
Yeah, the defense is incredible. We got to do some over-unders here and kind of check back in with the over-unders from the previous two episodes. So we're going to take a little break here and then play a little bit of Pick'em. It's over-under time. Dan, are you ready?
I'm always ready. Over-under on me being ready? Pick the over every time.
Smash the over. Okay, well, we've got to kind of revisit the previous ones. The first episode of The Big Number, which you can go back and listen to, talked about three-wheeling centers and whether we believe that they're actually going to start this new trend of taking a bunch of threes. We looked at 5 different bigs: DeAndre Ayton, Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, Derek Lively. Isaiah Hartenstein hasn't played, so we'll just forget about him. So far, 3 have hit for me and 2 have hit for you. So on that, we're, I guess, 3-2. The one that we've really missed so far is Bam Adebayo. Instead of taking 3.2 three-point attempts so far this season, he's at 2.4. We both thought he was going to take more than that. He's doing a little bit better recently. So check back next week. We will do so. And then last week, I don't feel great about this. Even though I'm 3-0, I had three hits on this. I feel like it's trending in the wrong direction. We already hit about Russell Westbrook, and he had an amazing game against Denver. So far, I'm right that the on-court offensive rating for the Denver Nuggets is going to stay underneath 100. That was the over-under line with Russell Westbrook on the floor. After Wednesday night's game, he's checking in at 98.6. So technically, my under on that is correct. You went over. Jokic's minutes per game, I said it was going to be over 37, but he's at 37.9, which is lower than he was last time we did this. So yes, I'm technically over, but the winds are changing here. And also, Jamal Murray got hurt. So this is kind of an asterisk here, but we had put the over-under on his effective field goal percentage of 50%. He is at 43.2%. So you're 0 for 3 on those, but like trending in the right direction here. I actually feel better about where you're at right now on your over-under picks than I am, even though the scoreboard says 6-2 right now. I kind of feel like this is going to even out.
I don't appreciate what you're doing right now, Tom, which is that you're being like a gracious winner and you're like, oh, no, but I really, like, I think you're like, I'm trying to get like you, man. I feel like you're coming up. Save it. All right. I don't need that. Also, I immediately regret saying that I always am ready for this. I was not ready to be completely smacked over the head with my own failures. But we're going to turn that all around because I'm going 3-0 this week. There's no doubt about it. I've never been more sure of anything in my life, including the previous weeks when I was sure about every decision that I made. So let's hear it. Let's hear what we got there this week, Tom. Let's go.
The confidence. It's Buddy Hield at the three-point line. I love it.
Call me Chavano. A lot of people have called me that before. Sometimes they call me Chavano. Yes.
Here's how we get to your 3-0, okay? OKC win percentage. Here's the first one. Over under 750. So that's approximately 61.5 win team. Last year, they're a 56 win team. The previous over under, I believe the win total for them was set at like 56 before the season or 56.5. This line is essentially saying they're going to be 5 wins better than they were last year. I'm going to take the over. I think this is going to be a 65-66 win team this year. So OKC win percentage, over under 750. Where are you on that?
I'm over with you on that. Maybe my strategy here is just ape Tom. And you go with him since it's his show and he's the smart one about numbers and not just some dope with a map behind him. I would say I wrote our season preview for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and I took the over. I think it was 56 or 56.5 for them heading into the season. I see no reason to go back on that, especially like they are nearing the point where they're going to get Isaiah Hartenstein back. They've been this good without him. I expect them to be even better with him. I expect, as we mentioned, I don't expect Alex Caruso to shoot 23% the entire season. I think some of the other guys that have had a little bit of a rough start to their shots, they're going to get online. And if that offense meets up with that defense at all, they're going to win a ton of games. So yeah, give me the over there.
Okay. You mentioned Alex Caruso because that is the second over under here. Alex Caruso, 7 points per game. It doesn't seem like a high bar, right? 7 points a game from a guy who's probably going to play 20, 25 minutes per game. I kind of flipping and flopping on this one. I feel like it's going to be the over. Last year, he averaged 10 points a game for the Bulls, but right now he's at 2.6. I'm essentially saying, can he be career rate of scoring 7 points per game for Alex Caruso entering this year? Can he reach that for this juggernaut OKC team? Or do you see him basically embracing that? I am a role player. Defensively, I'm going to give it 110%. Offensively, I'll just let everybody else do it. I'm actually on this one. I'm going to take the under. I'm going to take the under on 7 points per game.
I'm going to go the other way just because at some point, if I'm going to try to make up any ground here, I'm going to have to go up, opposing to you. So it's a riverside. It's a game theory for me. I like the idea of Alex Caruso being able to add significantly to this when he's not missing 80% of his shots. I think there's a real chance there. The things that I'm concerned about really is more about opportunity and usage. You mentioned he averaged 10 points a game in Chicago last season. He also played like 29 minutes a game. Right now, through 8 games, he's at 19.9. So basically cutting that by 10 minutes. So reduces your opportunities a bunch. He's also at, I think, like 11 or like 11.5 usage rate, which would be a dramatic decrease over the, even the last couple of seasons for him. And so that's like a, sorry, let me go back. His usage rate right now, yeah, it's like 11.7%, which is dramatically down from the last couple of seasons. So if you're using fewer percentage of fewer possessions per game and you're playing fewer minutes, I feel like there's a maybe a chance for you to drop down. But in the interest of disagreeing with you, frankly, and just going the other direction, I'm going to say he's going to hit a heater. He's going to start making some threes, and that's going to bump the three-point shooting up. And all he's got to do then is float above 7. 7.1 gets me there. Alex, let's have it. Come on. Help me out. I need to at least get level with this Haberstroh guy. You got to help me out, Tom.
Okay. Alex, he kind of looks like me. I'm going to put a headband on and make sure and get in his ear.
You got to get the mustache back, though. You got to get the mustache. Maybe some more watercolors to get the facial hair going again.
I got to make it happen. I don't think the viewers want that. The viewers do not want that. Maybe I get a headband going. If this is trending in the right direction for me, I got to start doing a headband for this episode.
I'm all about accessories, Tom. We got to make it work.
All right. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Not playing up to his levels. The three-point shot hasn't fallen for him this year. He's taking more volume. But the thing I want to zero in on is his free throw attempts, which kind of depends on the referees to do what we're saying here. And I'm making a bet that he is going to do a lot more that like he did last game where he had 10 free throws a game. I think he should have had 10 plus, way more than that in the Wednesday night's game. So I actually think that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I'm going to put the line here at 8 free throw attempts per game. So far this season, it has not been 8, okay? It has been much lower than that. It's one of the biggest decreases across the NBA. He's at 6.3 field goal free throw attempts per game. And 2 years ago, that number was at 10.9. Last season, it was at 8.7. I'm setting the bar at 8. I'm going to take the over. Dan, what say you? Are you going to go? Are you going to zag because I'm zigging?
I am going to zag on it, but there's another reason for it. So one component for me taking the under here, as you mentioned, it's 6.3 right now. That would be his lowest free throw attempt total since his second season in the league before he obviously ascended into superstardom. But in a related story, or perhaps a related story, he's taken 6.1 threes a game this season, including 5.1 pull-up threes a game this season, which is nearly double what he took last season and about the same as Stephen Curry. So if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is, whether it's an organizational thing, a Mark Dagno thing, or just something individually that he feels like he wants to do, is just jack up that three-point frequency. If you're doing that, you're probably getting into the lane less. You're probably getting into the trees less. You're probably taking less contact and drawing fewer free throw attempts. So I think there is a chance that if he's dramatically increasing his three-point frequency, he's going to drop off his free throw rate. So I think that, especially if he's not trading in mid-rangers, which he's still taking a ton of, for more shots at the rim. So this is more of a shot selection issue for me than it is anything else. But that combined with if the refs are really going to call it a little bit looser on the perimeter, they're not going to give you quite as many of those touch fouls outside, that combined might drop down his free throw inventory. So give me the under. Part of it is I got to zag on you, but part of it is there might be a couple of issues here that are combining to drop that number down.
Yeah, he's still taking a bunch of mid-range shots. A lot of them that he took last year, now a step behind the three-point line. He's actually shooting 29% of his field goal attempts are coming at the rim inside 3 feet. Last year, that number was 25%. So it's gone up. His proportion of shots at the rim has gone up. But field goal attempts evaporate once you get fouled. So a lot of those attempts might be actually foul calls last year that are now being counted as field goal attempts at the rim. So maybe some of those high contact plays are not being whistled. So maybe that number falls as we go forward. But all right. I see where you've put the lines have been drawn. I see where you're going on this. We're agreeing on OKC being better than 75% win team. But on the other stuff, we're not seeing eye to eye on that. And we'll check back in next week. We will check back on Thursday on all these over-unders, including Russell Westbrook. Can he sustain 75% shooting from downtown like he did against OKC? I don't see it. I'm going to bet the under on that.
No. I mean, there's no way it can ever go in a different direction. Russ, as we've all said constantly, one of the most accurate high volume 3-point shooters in NBA history. No one has ever said anything differently than that. So I expect that line to just continue going up, 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 all the way to me going from Russell Westbrook being a normal body temperature for his offensive rating to having a raging fever for his offensive rating when he's on the court, and then getting me a little bit closer to you in the standings, because yeah, we got to make a jump here.
Yeah, I'm gonna be nice to you again. I don't feel good about my lead right now, so we'll see next week where that 6-2 scoreboard looks like. And as always, go subscribe, rate, and review to The Big Number wherever you listen to podcasts. Go check out the YouTube feed. We are taping this on video as well. And I want to give a special shout out here to Emmy, the producer who's working on this episode, and the entire team that works behind the scenes so hard to make this a reality. And we'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, Dan, thank you for being on with me again. It's been a lot of fun.